Dayamatma pravachanena labhyo namedasana bahuna shutena yameva shavrinute tena labhyas tasyesha atma mrivinute tanum swam. The Supreme Lord is not obtained by expert explanations, by vast intelligence, or even by much hearing. He is obtained only by one whom he himself chooses. To such a person, he manifests his own form. One description given of Brahman is Satyam Brahma Anandam Rupam. Brahman is the absolute truth and complete Ananda or bliss. The forms of Vishnu, the Supreme Brahman, were one, but they were manifested differently. The followers of the Upanishads, however, cannot understand the varieties manifested by Brahman. This proves that Brahman and Paramatma can actually be understood only through devotion, as confirmed by the Lord Himself in Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhaktyaham ekaya ghraya. Bhagavatam 11.14.21. To establish that Brahman indeed has transcendental form, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives various quotations from the Shastras. In the Svetashvatara Upanishad 3.8, the Supreme is described as Aditya Varnam Tamasa Parastat. He whose self-manifest form is luminous like the sun and transcendental to the darkness of ignorance. Ananda Matram Ajaram Puranam Ekam Sanantam Bahuda Drishyamanam. The Supreme is blissful with no tinge of unhappiness. Although he is the oldest, he never ages, and although one, he is experienced in different forms. Sarve nitya shashvatascha dehastasya paratmanaha. All the forms of the Supreme Person are eternal. Maha Varaha Purana. The Supreme Person has a form with hands and legs and other personal features, but his hands and legs are not material. Bhaktas know that the form of Krishna or Brahman is not at all material. Rather, Brahman has a transcendental form, and when one is absorbed in it, being fully developed in bhakti, one can understand him. Premanjana chuchurita bhakti vilochanena. The Mayavadis, however, cannot understand this transcendental form, for they think that it is material. Transcendental forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His person are so great that the impersonal followers of the Upanishads cannot reach the platform of knowledge to understand them. Particularly, the transcendental forms of the Lord are beyond the reach of the impersonalists, who can only understand through the studies of the Upanishads that the Absolute Truth is not matter and that the Absolute Truth is not materially restricted by limited potency. Yet although Krishna cannot be seen through the Upanishads, in some places it is said that Krishna can in fact be known in this way. Upanishadam Purusham. He is known by the Upanishads. This means that when one is purified by Vedic knowledge, one is then allowed to enter into devotional understanding. Mad bhaktim labhate panam. Tachchadana munayo gyanavairagya yuktaya pasyantyatmani chatmanam bhaktya shruta guhitaya. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes the absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. This is from the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 12. The word shruta guhitaya refers to Vedanta knowledge, not sentimentality. Shruta grihita is sound knowledge. Lord Vishnu, Brahma thus realized, is the reservoir of all truth, knowledge, and bliss. He is the combination of these three transcendental features, and he is the object of worship for the followers of the Upanishads. Brahma realized that all the different forms of cows, boys, and calves transformed into Vishnu forms were not transformed by mysticism of the type that a yogi or demigod can display by specific powers invested in him. The cows, calves, and boys transformed into Vishnu murtis or Vishnu forms were not displays of Vishnu Maya or Vishnu energy, but were Vishnu himself. The respective qualifications of Vishnu and Vishnu Maya are just like those of fire and heat. In heat, there is the qualification of fire, namely warmth, and yet heat is not fire. The manifestation of the Vishnu forms of the boys, cows, and calves was not like the heat, but rather like the fire. They were all actually Vishnu. Factually, the qualification of Vishnu is full truth, full knowledge, and full bliss. Another example may be given with material objects, which may be reflected in many, many forms. For example, the sun is reflected in many water pots, but the reflections of the sun in many pots are not actually the sun. There is no actual heat and light from the sun in the pot, although it appears as the sun. But each and every one of the forms Krishna assumed was fully Vishnu. We should discuss Srimad Bhagavatam daily as much as possible, and then everything will be clarified, for Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedic literature. Nigama Kalpa Taror Galitam Palam. It was written by Vyasadeva, Mahamuni Kute, when he was self-realized. Thus, the more we read Srimad Bhagavatam, the more its knowledge becomes clear. Each and every verse is transcendental. Om Ajnana Timinandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Padakam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Stra Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Shri Vishakanvitangscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dhina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Ghorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langay Tegrim Yat Kripam Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, before I begin my presumptuous attempt to speak on the words of Srila Prabhupada in front of a bunch of my seniors, I'd like to ask the blessings of everyone in the room and of the devotees that may be hearing this. Without that, I don't think there can be any success, and my goal here really is self-purification, because that's really, I think, the only thing that can come out of this situation. I'll just reread the translation. The Vishnu Murtis all had eternal, unlimited forms, full of knowledge and bliss, and existing beyond the influence of time. Their great glory was not even to be touched by the jnanis engaged in studying the Upanishads. So just to give a little bit of perspective, I'll just quickly summarize where we are. So this is the Brahma Vimohan Lila, or the bewilderment of Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma is on the hot seat right now. We're coming to the climax of his bewilderment, the very peak of his fear and anxiety and feeling of offense and the intensity of this lila. So Lord Brahma, he couldn't comprehend that Krishna could really be his Ishtadev, Vishnu. Because he heard, but when he went to see and he saw Krishna sitting with all the cowherd boys, and he saw him being so friendly, he was just bewildered. They're sharing food. Krishna's Yajna Bhuk. You know, we've heard this a million times. I've said it in four classes now. But Krishna's Yajna Bhuk, he takes the ghee that we take from the Surabhi cows, and it has to be perfect, and the mantras have to be said nicely in the yajna. Everything has to be perfect, and then we hope and pray that he'll accept that ghee. And usually he does, but the standard is so high that we have to do so much to offer that ghee. And yet, he's sitting here with a bunch of vaishyas, a bunch of low cowherd men, and he's sharing with them. I just watched Madhu Mangal with buttermilk, and Krishna wanted some of the buttermilk, and so Madhu Mangal swigged all of it because he said, "No, I can't give you my buttermilk. I'm a brahmana. I'll be contaminated. No. And then he went to swig all of it down, and he had it in his mouth like that, and Krishna went and clapped his cheeks, and the buttermilk went out of Madhu Mangal's mouth into Krishna's mouth. I just watched that. This can't be God. What is this?" Lord Brahma was thinking, no, there's no way. And so he thought, I have to test him. I'll give him some little test. And so he stole the cowherd boys. First he stole the calves, and he took away the cowherd boys. And then when he went back to check, they were all still there. And so Lord Brahma was thinking, wait a second. No. So he went back and he looked in the cave that he hid the cowherd boys in, and he saw that they're still there, and he came back, and they're still there. They're still with Krishna. And so at this point, Lord Brahma's anxiety starts to hit. He starts to think, whoa, there's something bigger at play than my power here. I thought I was Swayambhu. I think I'm the manifester of this universe. You know, I arrange things, but there's something bigger than me here. And so then, as his bewilderment started to peak, and he started to really wonder, what is going on? What in the world is happening here? These cowherd boys and the calves, they all turned into his Ishtadev. Because one of the goals of Krishna, our acharyas write in this pastime, is also to deepen Lord Brahma's understanding and to give him pleasure by showing him that, yes, I'm your Ishtadev. Not only am I your Ishtadev, but that one you worship as your Ishtadev, an unlimited number of him emanate from me. There's so many Vishnu forms here. So many Vishnu forms are here. Look, innumerable Vishnu forms. Your Ishtadev is here. And so Lord Brahma, he's thinking, and then he sees all the opulences of Vishnu, as we've heard in the directly preceding verses. He sees all the opulences of Vishnu. Worship him. He sees all the living entities who are worshiping him. And he starts to become more and more bewildered. I really, really messed up. And then we hear here a little bit of Lord Brahma's thought process. Prabhupada enunciates nicely. He says, I'll just paraphrase a bit because I don't want to read the entire paragraph. Brahma realized that all the different forms of cows, boys, and calves transformed into Vishnu forms were not transformed by mysticism of the type that a yogi or demigod can display by specific powers invested in him. The cows, calves, and boys transformed into Vishnu Murtis or Vishnu forms were not displays of Vishnu Maya or Vishnu energy, but were Vishnu himself. So he says here, Lord Brahma realized, wow, this isn't some potency. This isn't like some yogi. This isn't like me trying to manifest multiple forms of myself, because Brahma can also do that. We hear about Kardama Muni manifesting, I think Prabhupada writes in a purport, a yogi can manifest up to 7 different or 8 different versions of himself, but they all have to do the same thing. But to an honest onlooker, this looks amazing. It's, wow, you know, there are more than one of him. But each one of these Vishnu forms was independent, and there were innumerable amounts of them, because there are innumerable cowherd boys. And so Brahma is thinking, this is something I have no experience of. I have no experience of this at all. And so this increased Lord Brahma's understanding and his respect, and as we'll hear going forward, his devotion, to the point where he will give up even the desire to actually understand, and he'll just want to surrender, which is the real climax of this pastime for us bhaktas. Well, this is the climax of the intensity of Lord Brahma's bewilderment. And then Prabhupada explains nicely the difference here by giving the example of a pot and the sun being reflected in the pot, which is one of the Mayavadi's main arguments for the Mayavad philosophy and for saying that all the jivas are actually Brahman and they're just reflected. I don't remember the technical term, but they have two arguments. One is reflection and one is transformation. Yeah, so like one is transformation means like clay is molded into pots. That's the example that they give. And then when it's destroyed, it goes back into the clay. And then this reflection is, if you have a pot full of water, the sun reflected in the pot or the moon reflected in the pot is like a little sun. But Prabhupada points out here that those pots, they don't have the light like the sun and they don't have heat. So this is like a yogi's power. This is like Maya. This is like Brahma's power. But these Vishnu forms, they are full. Prabhupada says that Vishnu is the reservoir of all truth, knowledge, and bliss in full. Full bliss, full truth, and full knowledge. And so, Lord Brahma is, he's in the hot seat. So that's the pastime. Prabhupada, this is a really beautiful purport. Prabhupada goes in quite a few directions here. And I just thought to kind of try to, a certain thought process popped up, and so I'd like to try to elucidate that a bit. First off, in the verse, Shukadeva Goswami points out that the great glory of these Vishnu Murtis is not understandable by the studiers of the Upanishads. And then Prabhupada goes to great lengths, and he quotes all of the same verses that Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes from the Upanishads to show that Krishna can only be realized by someone who he chooses to realize him. In other words, he has to give his mercy, otherwise there's no question of realizing. You can't break down the door of really deep spiritual realization. You can't come and bang on the door and demand to come in. You have to knock and you have to ask and you have to beg and you have to plead. And if the Vaishnavs are happy, if Krishna is happy, then you can be given some entrance. So Prabhupada, he elucidates on this point, and he takes this angle. And over the weekend, I was at a seminar, and there was one very beautiful verse from Padyavali that was presented that really encapsulates this very nicely. So just to try to churn a little bit, I was thinking to share that. So this is a verse that it's Rupa Goswami has compiled it in Padyavali, but it's spoken by Madhava Saraswati, who was the guru of Sridhar Swami. Now, in this time, they were in Benares, because this was the seat of learning of India, and it's still one of the seats for impersonalism and for, you know, all the six darshans. If you want to go study, even Jiva Goswami, he was sent to Benares to learn. I can't remember the sadhu who he's supposed to learn from, but he went there and he studied for years in order to be able to encapsulate the Sandarbhas and to write all of the writings that he did, because he's our Siddhantacharya. So Madhava Saraswati, being in Benares, and Benares being a very, very impersonal place, the seat of the Mayavadi philosophy, he had to be a covered devotee, just as Sridhar Swami. They both had Ekadanda Sannyas, so they outwardly were Mayavadis, but inwardly they were Vaishnavas. So Madhava Saraswati, obviously he would do puja to his deities, and I couldn't find the lecture, I can't remember who his deities were, but he was worshipping Krishna in one of the avatar forms. It wasn't Krishna, but one of the avatars of Krishna. And so now and again, the impersonalists would come to him and they would heckle him. And they would say, why are you doing this sentimental nonsense? You know, why aren't you studying Mimamsa? Why aren't you studying the Upanishads, the Vedas? You're singing songs and you're doing puja. This is all lower, because they also knew that he was very learned. So they're thinking, what? We're hearing you speak, and we're hearing, you know, some of your explanations of Vedanta, because again, covered Mayavad, so he also was speaking that philosophy. They're saying, we're hearing you speak, so what? Why do you do this, though? You know, why in your spare time are you wasting your time with this? Certainly you've realized past that. Brahman, or what is it? Bhagavan is just sattva-gun. Brahman contaminated by sattva-gun. You know, cast that off. Try to think about Brahman. Think about Vedanta. And so finally, one day, Madhava Saraswati Pad, he became annoyed. And there's one phrase in Hindi that 100 strikes by a goldsmith's hammer won't do. Sometimes it takes one strike by the blacksmith's hammer. And so this verse was his strike of the blacksmith's hammer. He had enough. One unlucky Mayavadi came and heckled him and heckled him. And finally, he said, okay, I'm not gonna tolerate this anymore. And this is the verse that he spoke on the spot. Mimamsa rajasam alima sadrisham tavanadrir ishware garvo darka kutarka karkashadhyam dure stivarta hare jananto pina janate shuti sukam shirangi sangadhrite suswadum parivesayantya pirasam gurvina darvi sprishe. Those whose eyes are blinded by the dust of the karma mimamsa philosophy cannot fix their hearts on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such individuals have a heart that has become hard due to false arguments that give nothing but false pride. The topics of Lord Hari are far away from them. Due to being devoid of devotee association, such individuals do not actually understand the Vedas, even though they may be externally very expert in the Vedas. Such individuals are like a great ladle which distributes all juices but does not taste the juices itself. So this is what happens if you only study the Upanishads with the goal of gaining knowledge for this neti, which we as Vaishnavas we don't do. But the ideal is given of a ladle. The example is given of a ladle. A ladle is plunged into a jar of something, and it's surrounded by it. It's completely enwrapped in whatever you say. It's honey, completely enwrapped in honey, but the ladle has no capacity to taste that honey. He can distribute it. He can speak. He can say things. He knows things. He's around things. He may be able to say different Upanishadic verses, but because he doesn't have the proper conception, because his position is that of a ladle, you can't taste any of it. So this is Madhava Saraswati's blacksmith's hammer, smashing this idea. And Prabhupada and Sri Vishwanath are backing this up with many, many verses to show that just that learning won't be enough. You won't be able to realize these things just by that learning. It requires bhakti. And Prabhupada quotes this verse, bhaktyaham ekaya kraya. Krishna says in the 11th canto in the 20th chapter that I'm only obtainable through bhakti. Aham graya. Graya means like pull, like graha, like a planet in astrology. A graha is called a graha because it exerts influence on your life. It pulls your life in a certain direction. So gra means to pull. Aham graya. I'm only pulled by bhakti. I'm only attracted by bhakti. So then we come to a bit of a conundrum, or at least in my thought process, and many times before, as I was learning as a devotee, I've still got a lot of miles to run, but as I was learning, we run into this dilemma that, okay, so we shouldn't study. Who needs gyan? You know, I can't even get Krishna by gyan. And sometimes we hear devotees speak like this. They say, Rupa Goswami says in Yabhilashita Jnana Karmadhyanavritam that bhakti, it shouldn't be contaminated by any tinge of karma or jnana. They translate this verse like this. But actually, if we look at this verse and we look at what Rupa Goswami is trying to tell us, and then we look at all of our acharyas and we look at what they went through in order to give us, and we look at the orders of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can see that jnana is actually very important for us as devotees. This bhakti jnana, this understanding of who I am, who Krishna is, who this material world is, and most importantly, what my relationship with Krishna is on the foundation of those three things. Because Sambandha can't be there without Gyan, and Abhideya also can't be there without Gyan. We can't move forward on the path without a proper conception of what we're moving towards, which is the Prayoja. So we have to know where we are, what the path is, and what the path leads to. And if, the only way we can know these things, because it's so vast in Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, it's such a beautiful, deep, wide, long, expansive, wonderful, amazing thing. The only way we can know this is by the mercy of our acharyas. And they've gone to great, great lengths to write enough books to maybe fill up that wall. You know, quite a lot of literature. So when we look at this verse by Rupa Goswami, Anya Abhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Adhyanavritam. So, bhakti, because these are the external characteristics of bhakti. The other half of the verse describes the internal characteristics, but right now I'm concerned with the external characteristics. Bhakti should be free from material desire. Anya Abhilashita. Anya Abhilashita. Abhilash means desire, and here it particularly means material desire. Anya means none. Anya Abhilash. There should be none. Jnana Karmad Yanavritam. Many people translate this as no karma, no jnana. But actually, our acharyas, they elaborate a little further on this, that karma, jnana, adi. Adi means other things. Like we say, Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Srivas and all of the others in the Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So Adi means other things. And our acharyas say specifically, these mean yoga, tapasya, studying, you know, so many other things are there. Anavritam does not mean there shouldn't be any. Anavritam means that that bhakti is not eclipsed by these things. That they have to be there, but they can't become the goal. They're useful insofar as they augment our desires to move closer to Krishna, and as insofar as they support our attempt to deepen our bhakti. So this is jnana karma dhyanavritam. Bhakti should not be eclipsed by karma, by jnana, or any other thing, like yoga or tapasya. So this is a very important understanding, and I find it very interesting in this verse that Prabhupada, even where Sri Vishwanath stops, Prabhupada, he makes this distinction. In the second half of the purport, he quotes a verse from the Bhagavatam in the beginning, and he says specifically this, Shruta Grihitaya, Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya, that this bhakti is performed on the basis of the knowledge that one has gained from the scriptures. So he makes this distinction, which I found was really, really wonderful. And then he ends with a really amazing paragraph that seems almost out of place for the purport. It seems like it was just juxtaposed into there. He says, we should discuss Srimad Bhagavatam daily as much as possible, and then everything will be clarified. For Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedic literature. Nigama Kalpa Taror Galitam Phalam. It was written by Vyasadeva, Mahamuni Kirte, when he was self-realized. Thus, the more we read Srimad Bhagavatam, the more its knowledge becomes clear. Each and every verse is transcendental. Prabhupada, it seems like he just had to get this out in describing this. Because the verse, on the other hand, is saying you can't get anywhere by studying the Upanishads, by studying the scriptures. And then Prabhupada backs it up. Sri Vishwanath backs it up. And then Prabhupada takes that line of thinking. And then halfway through, he says, but wait, you have to know that you do have to study. And then he says, we should study this Bhagavatam daily as much as possible. So on one side, we shouldn't acquire jnana, and on the other side, as much as we possibly can, every single day, we should immerse ourselves in jnana. But what jnana? Bhakti jnana. And so then I was thinking, my thought process went to a couple different verses. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he states, Sadhu Sangha Nama Kirta Bhagavat Shravana Maturavas Sri Murtina Tira Shradaya Sevana. That real bhakti means five things. Panchanga bhakti means bhakti performed in five ways. First, Sadhu Sangha, because Sadhu Sangha is the birthplace of everything in a bhakta's life. It has to come because of a devotee. It grows in the association of devotees, and it culminates in devotional service. Sadhu Sangha is really everything. And within that, Nam Kirtan. The devotees will tell me that I should chant the holy name, and then I will take up that practice. And then, Bhagavat Shravana. We should study the Bhagavatam. We should hear the Bhagavatam over and over. We should relish the Bhagavatam. As Prabhupada said, every day, as much as possible. And then the other two, Mathura Vas, one should live in Vrindavan. We hear from Rupa Goswami that this doesn't necessarily mean geography. It means we should be absorbed in Vrindavan. And how can we become absorbed in Vrindavan? By reading the Bhagavatam. We read the pastimes of Krishna in the Bhagavatam, and in that way, our mind can always be in the Bhagavatam. And then as we grow in devotional service, and if our gurus give us the okay, our acharyas, again, have written a wall of books, the size of that wall over there, enough books to fill that wall, about Vrindavan Smaranam, about Krishna Smaranam, about things that we can meditate on to bring us to Vrindavan, and that can allow us actually to enter more into the 10th canto, because the 10th canto is the Samambona. What is given in the 10th canto, everything else is there just to deepen our understanding of that beautiful realization of Vyasadeva and the words of Shukadeva and the words of the Acharyas as they expand on it. And then I was thinking, we hear that we should gain Shraddha in the beginning of our practice, and that Shraddha continues throughout the entirety of our practice. But in the beginning, Rupa Goswami says, Shraddha, he says, Adao Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. He says, first there is Shraddha. And in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the second chapter, Sri Vishwanath explains that this verse, Shushushro Shraddhanasya Vasudeva Katha Ruchi, what it means is Shraddha means Shastriya Shraddha. It means Vasudeva Katha Ruchi. That real faith in the beginning means that I, in my heart, is born a desire to hear about the topics of Vasudeva. Vasudeva Katha Ruchi. This is the beginning of taste, and it's the beginning of faith. And this deepens and deepens and deepens, and it's augmented and it's grown and it's actualized by our deepening of our understanding of Shastra. After a taste comes to want to understand, we dive headlong into that, and then this nourishes our practice practically like nothing else can, besides Sadhu Sangha and Nam Kirtan. But these three things go together, because the Sadhu will tell you, why aren't you reading? And your japa won't have any life if you don't. Prabhupada writes, I don't remember the exact quote, so forgive me, but Prabhupada writes in a few different places that there's no question of taking full shelter of the name if you don't understand the conception of who you're chanting to. That's why he gave us the Krishna book so early on, so that we could start to practice this conception of just thinking about Krishna. Thinking about Krishna in our day, in our chanting, like this. And then I thought of a couple really beautiful verses that I remembered and that I'd like to commit to my memory, that I'd like to try to etch into my heart. One is by Srila Sanatan Goswami in the Brihad Bhagavatam Rita. He gives kind of a Bhagavatam Mahatmya. He gives eight or so verses, and I'll just quote one because this is the one that really resonates with me. Paramananda Pataya. So when one reads you, oh Bhagavatam, oh great Bhagavatam, when one reads you, Pata means to read. Paramananda, he experiences great transcendental bliss. Prema Varsh Yakarshayate. Prema Varsh Yaksharayate. Your syllables, Akshara, they rain down Varsh Varsha Prema. Every syllable rains down prema. And Prabhupada says this. He says, each and every verse is transcendental. This is the last sentence of this purport. Each and every verse of the Bhagavatam is transcendental. Sarvada, Sarvasevyaya, and everyone in the universe, bar none, should render service to this Bhagavatam. How do we render service to the Bhagavatam? We read it. We relish it. We explain it. We try to dive into it. We beg the Bhagavatam, please, 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 let me understand this, that every syllable of every verse, even the second canto where the description of the universal form is there, and even the saints at Naimisharanya, they said when Shukadev Goswami, or when Suta Goswami was going to start describing more of the universal form, they said, wait, do you remember when Vidura spoke to Uddhava about Krishna? Can you tell us about that? Because they didn't want to hear anymore. They were there, most of them were there to hear about Krishna and to hear about the absolute truth. And so they said, okay, that was enough universal form talk. We don't need to meditate on this universal form. We want something higher. But even there, even everywhere, every te, every cha just means and. Every syllable reigns prema. We should pray to the Bhagavatam, please let me someday, kabe habe bol se dinamar, when will that day be mine? When I can see that, when I can feel that. Shri Krishnaya namostume, because you are Krishna. O Bhagavatam, you are Krishna. And therefore you can give this. Please, 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 we should pray. O Srimad Bhagavatam, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. By reading you, one attains transcendental bliss. For your syllables rain pure love of God upon the reader. You are always to be served by everyone, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. So, that's what I could churn today. Please forgive any offenses, anything that you've seen that is at fault or is incorrect, I take as my own, and anything that is nice is my guru's. So forgive me for any mistakes, and I welcome any questions, comments, or corrections. Sorry if I was a bit splayed today. I have a massive headache. Tamam bhajami.
And go at the speed of the mind, right? If one can, I think it's, I'm trying to think of the exact translation he gave. Unless one understands Krishna, they can travel at the speed of the mind for millions of years and never understand the essence of the Veda. So I guess one area we could discuss is how we use the term Vedic. We're after Vedic culture. We study the Vedas. If anyone asks us what the meal, we just start talking about the Vedas.
Yeah.
The Vedas are transcendental, the Vedas. So when we look at the Vedas, you know, we are Vedic, but we don't actually focus much on the
the Vedas themselves.
The four original Vedas.
Yeah. Well, this is described very elaborately in the beginning of Tattva Sandarbha as the basis of the Shat Sandarbhas by Jiva Goswami. And so he explains there that it's just not possible. In this age, we don't have the mental capacity to chant the Vedas, to understand the terse, you know, the sutras of the Vedas are very, very difficult. Very difficult to understand. And if they're not sutras, they're so long and broad and wide. And then, even if you can understand them, you don't have access to all of them. 1,000 years ago, the Muslims took over India and they burned most of the Vedas. They burned most of what we could have, to the point now where I was talking to Gokulananda Prabhu the other day, and yeah, we have like 5%, I think, is the actual number of the Vedic literature of the Upanishads, of all these things. So you could say it's not in the Vedas, but actually you can't substantiate that because you have 95% of the Vedas. So you don't know. You know, we really only have access to, in this age, to the commentaries of the Acharyas and to the Puranas. You know, and so what Jiva Goswami does is he gives a progression. He says, okay, the Vedas. And he establishes that the Vedas are the absolute truth. And then he says, but we can't study those. So then the fifth Veda. The fifth Veda is the Puranas. The fifth Veda is the Itihasas, the Mahabharata, and the Ramayana. And then he says, but the Puranas, they give many different things. They give many, many different things. So what do we have to do? Okay, we can't draw the actual essence only out of the Puranas in toto, because they're in sattva, they're in rajas, they're in tamas. They give conflicting answers. So the Vedanta Sutra. Vyasadeva composed the Vedanta Sutra, which was supposed to be the essence of the Puranas, which is supposed to be the essence of the Vedas, given in one book. But the Vedanta Sutra, again, it's arguable. The sutras are very terse, and we have Advaitavad. It's there. There are other commentaries and understandings of Vedanta Sutra. And so then he says, okay, so we can't go completely to the Vedanta Sutra, but there's the Mahabharata. And the Mahabharata talks about direct love for Lord Krishna. But it does it in about this much, in about half of a percent of the Mahabharata is dedicated to the glorification of Krishna. We have the Bhagavad Gita and we have a couple other things, which also are argued by the Mayavadis. So then, quoting Sri Vyasadeva's trance, which again, Prabhupada quotes here, and he says, Maha Muni Krite. And what Maha Muni Krite means is that Vyasadeva, in the height of his realization, after he wrote, the writer of the Puranas, and the compiler of the Puranas, and the compiler of all of the Vedic knowledge, as it's available to us now, he himself writes that in the height of my realization, I've written this Srimad Bhagavatam. The very peak of my realization. After I wrote all those other things, I was dissatisfied. And then my guru came and I asked him, what is the root of my dissatisfaction? And then he told me, you need to sit down and you need to meditate because you need to glorify Krishna unabashedly. You need to give full glorification to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so Jiva Goswami gives this staircase, if you will, to understand that the Bhagavatam is the, as Prabhupada says, Nigamakalpatura Ghalitam Phalam. It's the ripened fruit of Vedic knowledge. If you plant a tree, the tree is not the goal. The leaves are not the goal. The flowers may be a secondary goal, but ultimately the fruit is the goal. And what to speak of a fruit, the ripened fruit is the goal. So Srimad Bhagavatam, above the Vedas, above the Upanishads, amongst the Vedas, above the Puranas, above the Itihasas, which directly glorify God, Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost pramana. So Jiva Goswami, he elucidates like this. And then, just to give something, I forgot about this. One verse, at the very end of the Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva also tells us. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. That this Bhagavatam, it's dear to the Vaishnavs. Why? Because it's Puranam Amalam. It's the spotless Purana. And it's devoted only to the topics of Lord Krishna. Everything else is cast out. Dharma Projita Kaitavantra. All these other cheating varieties of religion, which actually refer, in a classic sense, to the other legs of the Vedas. It refers to karma. It refers to Gyan Marg. It refers to all of these other things that one can do, which they're cheating in the sense that they're cheating the living entities out of their enjoyment to try to give them something higher. But the Bhagavatam casts out all of that roundabout way of self-realization. And it says, this is it. Krishna is it. The Paribhasa Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is Bhagavan. So, like that. When we explain to people, you may not be able to get that across, but that's because this stuff is, it's not, in one sense, it will always be difficult to explain because it's covered. You know, Chaitanya, we're in the Sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's Chana Avatar. It means he's not going to just come out and say, I'm God. Because if he comes out and says, I'm God, people won't worship him for the reason why he came. People surrendered to Krishna, they surrendered to Ram, they surrendered to Hamsa, they surrendered to all of these other avatars. Because in those ages, Krishna comes and it's just known by the general populace that that is Bhagavan. When Krishna was around, there were some, you know, jealous people like Shishupal and Dantavakra and Jarasandha, but they're very much the minority. Your average person just knew Krishna's Bhagavan. He's come, God has come, and he's here, and he's with us, and we can go see him and worship him and take darshan, and he's there. That's Bhagavan. Ram, he's Bhagavan. You know, there's no doubt about that for the denizens of Treta Yuga, Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga. But Mahaprabhu comes as the Chana avatar specifically because he wants people to cultivate love, which isn't doable in the way Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants it done if he comes out and says, I'm God. Because then the default is that, okay, this is God, worship him on reverence, it's wonderful, you know, he's amazing, you're so amazing, you're the maintainer of me and everything and everyone, and everything's going, and we all know this, and it's not possible. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he comes as Chana avatar, as Prahlad Maharaj describes, in order to give this opportunity. So we're stuck in kind of a paradox, that we're meant to spread this really confidential knowledge, but we also have the headache that it's not easy for us. It won't be easy, because it's covered. Because some intelligent guy who has some Upanishadic knowledge will say, well, what about this and this and this, and I can interpret your verse this way, and you say, Sangrupangastra Parshadam, but I can say that means this and this. And I can, you know, you Chana avatar, who's it? That doesn't mean you're Mahaprabhu, he's a devotee. You go to Jagannath Puri, if you're Indian and you go in the Jagannath temple, the pandas will heckle you and they'll say, ah, you are wrong. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a devotee. He's not Bhagavan. And they'll make, my friend was telling me this the other day. He said, you're actually lucky you can go inside, because they if they know you're a Gaudiya Vaishnava, they poke fun at you, you know, and he's a devotee. That's the general mood. So it's like that. The Mayavadis, they'll say, like they did to Madhava Saraswati, they'll say, what are you doing? Sentimentality. And we see this. But we have something beautiful, so we don't mind. Let them do it. And those who are Yajanti Hi Sumeda Saha, who are greatly intelligent, they will be attracted. Prabhupada said, we're selling diamonds. Not everyone can afford diamonds. Not everyone is even interested in diamonds. But those who know what a diamond is, who have some conception, who have some attraction, they will come and they will buy. I don't know if that answered your question. Sorry, it was a bit of a ramble. But, okay.
I do hear that Prabhupada mentions a lot that when Krishna comes, most people didn't know he was God. That a few people, his intimate associates could understand, but most people it was bewildering. They could not ascertain his position. His human-like activities were bewildering to the masses. All of the devotees, because of love, they understand. But most people, they couldn't understand that he's just a king or something, you know?
Yeah, we'd have to research, because I heard some pretty convincing, compelling evidence in the other way, and there can be different angles, you know? So I don't know. But yeah, we definitely have to take it back and see.
I was just reading in the Harinam Chintamani yesterday, or the day before, about chanting, but, you know, submissive oral reception, hearing the scriptures and stuff, but then if there's not service, then it's just sound. Krishna says those who come to me in knowledge are the highest, the service attitude has to be there. And I remember Prabhupada always saying, do the needful,
So
no matter what it was, we're just instrumental, we're just playing a part, but in the same time the heart's becoming purified. But I just remember that, because people come and they don't want to do anything practical. They'll hear for prasadam, and then like Anuttama was saying on Saturday, or was it when he gave class, when you take it home with you, you have to, there has to be a practical application with it too, just in our general affairs of, he was talking about the things people do, they want immediate results and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's so much competition for, material wealth and position and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
But the devotee can intercede and he can, calm that fever by his presence. So they were talking about, instead of getting angry, try to bring it around to the situation where they can reflect and not make, it's just like, what do they say? Ours is simple living and high thinking, and theirs is, low thinking. The phrase I'm talking about? That they use?
I understand what you mean. I haven't heard the particular one.
I can't remember the exact
the opposite
thing, but
of what we do, huh?
It just kind of came to mind, but... what's that? Yeah. And then I like the Hare Krishna movie where, and devotees are just starting out in 1966 in October, and the one fellow was there, and Hari Sari gave a comment on this. He said, this one devotee says, they're functioning on a high level, but we're functioning on a low level, on a high level.
This was Achyutananda Prabhu in the Hare Krishna movie. It's from one of the videos with Prabhupada at 22nd Avenue.
Yeah, but it wasn't Achyutananda, it was somebody else, but it was like really kind of reflective, but it was, it was in that grain of thought.
Yeah, I think he said we're operating low on a high level.
Yeah.
And they're operating high on a low level.
Yeah, I thought
In other words, we're really poor here, but we have the best thing, and they have all this opulence, but what are they using it for?
Yeah. So I thought that was very, interesting.
Yeah, very nice.
Well, it's neat, but I was, I think Jitendra kind of touched on a natural question that arose from the presentation, and because of the mention that gyan and karma can be supportive factors for bhakti and shouldn't eclipse bhakti, which is a point you brought up, and I thought it was very significant. So the natural question that would have arisen is, what is it that prevents that danger of gyan or karma actually eclipsing bhakti, or is there such a danger? And I think Jitendra kind of helped to, clarify the point a little from a different angle. But anyway, that was the natural question that arose. But it is a bit late, so I don't know if you want to go into it. But
I won't give up one of my technical 10-minute monologues. I apologize for those. I think I like Jitendra's answer in that, one has to be practically rooted in the world, and we have to do practical things that... And in that way, we don't just become completely cerebral and lost. But to some degree, that also doesn't sit well with me, because ultimately, everything we do is because we don't have a taste, and it's there to cultivate a taste. Prabhupada, one of my favorite quotes by Srila Prabhupada is quite heavy, but it's a strong dose of the right medicine. Prabhupada said, our only business is chanting Hare Krishna. And because you can't do that, I've racked my brain to come up with so many other things for you to do. Because ultimately, what is service? Service is panchanga bhakti. Service means Nam Kirtan, Bhagavat Shravan, Mathura Vas. It means these things, these integral things. And because your general person, your general devotee, because I don't have enough taste for that yet, to do it. Other things are presented. Krishna gives other things. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, things only move forward with his sanction. Prabhupada was able to come and spread the movement because Mahaprabhu wanted Prabhupada to be the man to come and spread the movement. We have a big worldwide organization right now, and we have lots of devotees, and I don't think their problem is that they don't get engaged practically. I think their problem is that they don't get potent Hari Katha, and they don't have deep spiritual lives, and they're not encouraged to have that. They're told generally that come to the temple and, you know, do this thing, do that thing, and wash the pots and like this, but, you know, devotees don't really need sambandha. Our devotees that are around for 5, 10, 20 years, they need abhideya. They need to hear what? What's the purpose? What's the beauty? They need to hear a little prayojan. What's the purpose of what I'm moving towards? That's my firm conviction. And that's what I've seen in my own life and in the life of others. When a wonderful devotee comes around who can really speak deeply about our philosophy and is living it himself, then people become inspired and they want to do these things and they want to actually perform Panchanga Bhakti. The problem is the practical things are there so that we don't go do all other nonsense. Many devotees, because they're not encouraged to have much taste, they're not trying to practice bhakti in a serious way in their life. They're just doing what they see as the requirement so they don't feel too guilty for being in the society. And then they also don't do practical service, so then they just dedicate their lives to their job, to their kids, to whatever, and they think of Krishna once a month. You know, once in 6 months. I know, I have friends who they're like, I just can't do it. It just can't work for me. It won't work. It's too hard. And I think this is the main problem here is a lack of potent Hari Katha. We all know what it's like to be in a class. Maybe our Guru Maharaj gave it and it was potent. 2 hours went by and we're like, what? It's been 10 minutes. It's been 30 minutes max. That wasn't 2 hours. And then we go away and then we want to chant, we want to read, we want to study. This is Panchanga Bhakti and it's lit up by Sadhu Sangha. So, sorry, I won't go any further. It's 8:45. I hope that was a decent answer. It's my thought process lately, so I'm a little passionate about it. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Shri Kishore Kishore ki jai, Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadramarani ki jai, Shri Shri Gauranitai ki jai, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivrinda ki jai. Hare Krishna.